Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Welcome to Real World News with Chara Ann Tappan and Reggie Kearney, bringing you commentary on headline news from all over the world. Your comments are welcome by dialing area code 646-200-3148 or join us in the chat room. Real World News, news for us, by us, and that affects us all. Let's get this show started.
Welcome to Real World News Radio. I'm Tony Breedlove, and I am just doing the introduction tonight for the team. For Chara Ann Tappan and Reggie Kearney, tonight we welcome you to dial in and be a part of the conversation. The number here is 646-200-3148. Tonight's topic is based on what's going on with the DACA program. The title of tonight's show is Dreamers, an Immigration Nightmare. But before we get started on tonight's show, we do like to recognize our sponsors. And in doing so, we're going to take you into a short break. So we'll be right back and begin this conversation with Chara Ann Tappan and Reggie Kearney. Real World News Radio. We'll be right back.
Have you ever passed a sister or brother and was taken by their beautiful skin and hair? Well, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. And that secret is Shades of Africa. Shades of Africa carries products for that beautiful hair and beautiful skin. They carry a wide range of natural hair and skincare products, as well as aroma oils, burning oils, authentic African jewelry, art, and artifacts. So for all your fine African products, visit Shades of Africa in two locations, in the city of Corona at 114 East 6th Street and in the city of Long Beach at 1001 East 4th Street. You can contact them by phone in Corona at area code 951-284-7888 and in Long Beach by dialing area code 562-436-2210. Shop in person or online by going to www.shadesofafrica.com. That's Shades of Africa, A-F-R-I-K-A. When shopping in person or ordering by phone, mention Hot Topics Talk Radio for 15% off your purchase. Shades of Africa, for the mind, body, and spirit.
Okay, so we're back here on Real World News Radio with Chara Ann Tappan and Reggie Kearney. And tonight's topic, again, is Dreamers and an Immigration Nightmare. So today there are hundreds of thousands of Dreamers facing the possibility of having to leave the only home that they've ever known after President Donald Trump had moved to end the DACA program. And that's the program that Obama had put in place to protect people who were brought here into the U.S. illegally as children from being deported. Well, according to the latest federal figures, approximately 800,000 people have been approved for DACA since it began, and roughly 690,000 are currently enrolled in this program. If Congress doesn't take action before March, then Trump plans to begin phasing DACA's protections out, which means that Dreamers could face deportation regardless of their skin color or the country of its origin. So Reggie Kearney and Chara Ann Tappan, I'm going to move this to you so you can go ahead and get into tonight's topic.
All right, then. Just so many thoughts crossed my mind on this subject, but I have to say that I've been heartened by the response in several states. You have organizations joining together, and some led by elected officials, to collect money and donations to help DACA students pay the close to $500 they'll need to renew their application. And that fills me with a little hope that the soul of the entire country has not been lost. But, you know, this is disgusting. You know, first Trump was talking about deporting bad hombres, you know, those people who break the law. And, you know, the implications while he was running was that you're talking about murderers and rapists, which he loved to mention frequently. But now we see that the goal is much wider than that, when not only DACA is threatened, but also an attempt to rewrite the qualifications that are needed or the standards that are looked at when accepting applications for people to come in, even those who come in legally. And there is a definite trend, and I know you say, and I agree, that people of all shades and religions and ethnic backgrounds or nationalities can be impacted. When you look at the figures that contribute, that make up the 800,000, most of them are coming from countries of color or impoverished countries. You know, you've got Mexico, of course, which is the top, and then El Salvador, Honduras, Peru, Korea, South Korea, of course, Brazil, Ecuador, Colombia, the Philippines, Argentina. It's a very particular type of people that, for the most part, are going to be impacted by this. And when you look at all of these actions that he's taken collectively, I can't help but see this as a war on people of color. Reggie, what are your thoughts?
Well, I agree with you. It is definitely a war on people of color. Now, granted, you do have people from all countries around the world coming to the United States and probably fit into this program, but I guarantee you they haven't registered for this program. I think you'll find out that the majority of the people who have registered for this program are of Latino Hispanic descent. And I remember when the conversation was going on here in Maryland, really before it became a national discussion, Maryland had already moved forward to offer some type of protection to the young people who had come into Maryland because their parents had moved here after they moved from the Central America and South American countries. And Maryland is probably one of the, other than California, I think we're number three as far as the number of people who are registered under DACA here in the United States. So, hasn't been a lot of discussion here in Maryland because it's business as usual compared to the other states around the country. You know? So I think it's a very important program, but I think a lot of it, what's going on there, is Trump's determination to carry out his campaign promises. Mm-hmm. And I really think that's what it's all centered around. He promises... he promised people he'd be tough on immigration, and that's what he's trying to do.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, these people, these children, who some of them may be young adults but now, or may even be adults by now, for all intents and purposes, were raised in this country. They may as well be American in everything but name alone. We're talking about administrative paperwork. These people have gone to school here. They've worked here. They've paid taxes here. They're law-abiding citizens. When you look at the statistics in terms of native-born people that are incarcerated versus DACA people incarcerated, there's certainly considerably more native-born people incarcerated. As a matter of fact, it's my understanding that you can't even qualify for DACA if you have a criminal record or you've been arrested here. So, all of the arguments that I see against it are fallacious, and they're a cover-up for a white supremacist agenda. I mean, look, if you have people from other countries, I mean, I've had friends, very close friends that I know from Albania and other countries that worked very hard to gain their citizenship. I know a young man who worked with my company for a brief period but then had to leave because he was having difficulty renewing his visa to stay. And, he was a very bright young man and wanted to work and wanted to continue to go to school. These aren't people who are the takers, as Romney used to like to call them. They are contributing to society. These aren't bad hombres. And it's kind of like the argument when people say, well, what about black-on-black crime when you talk about the Black Lives Movement? Suddenly people become completely blind to the fact that you've got American citizens born and raised here with all of the alleged opportunities that we have in this country who still choose the wrong path and break the law, commit heinous murders and rapes and rob places and things of that nature. Where's the outrage on those folks? You know, if our own citizens can't maintain the standard, we don't talk about kicking them out. You know, there's no, it's not like we have a penal colony like the English did and we can ship them off to. But they are solely focused on people of color. You don't see them complaining about Europeans staying here past their visa. And frankly, they can blend. So it's not quite as obvious when you have a white student in a school whose parents emigrated here and their child and they're here illegally or past their visa. You know, this is just another excuse to allow ICE to go rampant into schools and start dragging people out. It is disgusting, and it is the antithesis of American values.
But I think one of the things is that we do have to address the immigration issue, okay? And I think it's something that we missed the boat on years ago when immigration started happening and people were coming in from the countries south of us, okay? And something that, you know, really Democrats should have addressed a long time ago, but I think they felt like it wasn't a need to address it, that it would probably solve itself. But I think what's happened over the years, that it has become a problem in a sense that the system has been overwhelmed, and now they're trying to figure out how to fix the system. And the Democrats had a good opportunity the first 2 years when Obama was in office before the Republicans gained control of the House and Senate, before they gained control of the House and Senate, to they could have made an impact and they could have really taken care of this issue before it got to this point. But like everything else that Obama did, Trump has tried to destroy it. So if they had put in a meaningful immigration procedures and operations during that his first 2 years of office, they'd probably be tearing it apart now. So what you saying, Tony?
Well, you know what? I kind of like want to go back a little bit. And I don't know. Maybe it's just me. But in a lot of ways, I believe that because there was not the success that was thought to be or going to be with the policies of what we call, quote unquote, the Muslim ban, that this is just the second step of trying to make something work to keep people of color out of the country. And I keep saying it over and over, is just the start of making this an all-white nation. That's my belief. And I, you know, I don't want to like impose that on anyone, but that's my belief. This is their way of making it an all-white nation. When it was never an all-white, well, it was an all-white nation, not really, because the Indians were here. But if you can't get your foot around the ban of Muslims, which was basically the brunt of the people that were supposed to have been banned from this country. We were talking about banning people of Muslim faith, which happened to also be people of color. So if you can't wrap your head around that, and that cannot be something that's been being passed because, you know, you've got judges who are sitting there saying, this is not going to happen. They're fighting that. So why not then take the DACA program, which was enacted by Obama, which he wants to do away with everything he's done, including that, because that particular program was set so that people who were here that happened to be of color of other countries, they are doing a good job or they're doing their due diligence of getting educated, getting jobs when they come out of college. They're viable people in this country. And if you can't get that quote unquote Muslim ban going, then why not step in and try and, you know, turn it in the direction that you're doing with removing the DACA program? Why not?
This is just a cleaner form of ethnic cleansing before things get dirty. before things get dirty. Exactly. I mean, you look at what they did, and look what they did in Dominica and Haiti, kicking all of the Black Dominicans
right.
out and forcing them to go to Haiti, even though they were
exactly.
Dominican, born and raised.
They were Dominican.
And lived there.
Right.
Were born and raised, and of course now what you've got going on in Myanmar with the Muslim, I forget the name of the group, that are being, surprisingly and oddly enough, tormented by Buddhists of that country, which I can't fathom. It's happening globally. You know, we just may be going about it in a slightly more civilized way at first. But again, and I've brought this up in the past, it reminds me of a book by Daniel Quinn called After Dachau. And it starts off with a movement to offer people the opportunity to have a free ride to go back to their country, when in actuality what they were doing was putting them on ships and killing them to the point. And after they handled things nicely, the few remaining people who did not want to leave were hunted down and shot. And it was a very short book, but very poignant and very frightening look at a dystopian future where America does become an all-white nation and they completely rewrite history. And when I look at all of the agenda items, the appointments, the positions that he takes, the things he's trying to accomplish, it truly reminds me of this and other dystopian books that I've read. And it's absolutely disgusting. And I'm heartened by the fact that the first article I read this evening in advance of this show is showing people coming together and raising money for these folks to afford to purchase their renewals. Now, the question I have is, if this doesn't work the way Trump and his clan want it to work, suppose
what's
all
next?
Of them manage to, you know, what's next?
Yeah.
Exactly. If all of them or most of them manage to get their permits renewed, will it be harder for them to renew once it expires? Or will,
of course,
you know, what obstacle is he going to put in their way next? And, you know, I can think of plenty of DACA students who graduated cum laude, multiple degrees, who've invented things, who've become doctors. Some have even eventually, I think, gotten into elected positions. And,
right.
You know, you may have seen a tirade that I had this afternoon because somebody just set me off. But it's like if your child is failing school, it's not because there's DACA students in that school, because I guarantee you
exactly.
those DACA students have a better work ethic than your child. And
yeah.
if your child is
well,
failing in school, you're failing as a
right.
parent.
Well, I mean, well, it's just like, and it's just like that old adage, and I'm sure that you guys have heard about it, and I know that Reggie's heard about it, when, you know, we come up as Blacks in school or whether we, you know, go out and get our first job, our parents have always told us, you have to work so much harder than the rest of the folks, because there's always going to be that, you know, that stigma. Tied to the fact that when you're of color, that you cannot learn the same way that our white counterparts will learn. We don't have the ability to learn, or they say we don't have enough in us to gain anything that is called anything nearly close of excellence. So I know for a fact that when I was coming up, that's what I heard. So you can't blame it on the fact that, you know, if there's a drop in the overall educational value or what these kids are learning or not learning, you can't say, oh, because they're a dreamer, because they're under the DACA program, because you might as well say that, you know, if my child failed out of school, oh, it's because he's Black, he's African-American, he's of African descent. That's saying the same thing. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
Unless your child went to a school that was not, you know, was within a neighborhood where the tax revenue from real estate wasn't high enough to
wasn't high enough.
Books, and you know, right. all of that. I mean, there are other reasons for children to fail in school, regardless of their color.
Absolutely.
But complacency and laziness is certainly one of them. You know, I can't tell you how many people I meet on a daily basis who almost seem proud of the fact that they don't read. And that
wow.
just a little piece of me dies inside when I hear that. But I think
wow.
that this country and other countries foster that. You know, we're getting off topic a little bit, but, you know, in terms
right.
of education, they're supposed to inspire students to want to learn more. And the thing about these
right.
DACA students that are here, they are inspired out of the gate to hit the ground running and succeed, as compared to a lot of native-born Americans, regardless of color, who become complacent mm-hmm. and, you know, don't question the facts of what they're learning or what's being taught in school. They learn
mm-hmm.
enough just to pass the test and no more. There's no Socratic method. You know, so, you know, like I've said a million times, there is a purposeful dumbing down of the country. You know, and I guess at the end of the day, the real fear is that Native, you know, Anglican or Western Americans, not to bring up Native Americans, but, you know, the Western American won't be able to compete with all of the people that come in here from other countries and go to school and learn because they want to and they love learning. And in that respect, yes, they can take positions of leadership and take over this country. But then you know what? Maybe they should, because we certainly don't want this country being run by more people like Obama or DeVos.
Reggie?
As I go back to the beginning of everything, okay? This is the politicians. What we have in this country now is the result of politicians, both Republicans and Democrats, not looking down the road and seeing what was going to happen today, okay? Now, let's
uh-huh.
take it back when they came into this country looking for jobs, okay? They were taking over jobs that, in a sense, many African Americans wouldn't take over. They were labor type of jobs in those in that arena, okay? They were being brought into the country for cheap labor. I mean, it was even happening here in Maryland with Purdue Chicken, okay? Because, you know, the work at Purdue Chicken, and you probably seen on 60 Minutes, people were suffering from carpal tunnel syndrome because repetitive cutting the chickens and stuff. People weren't gravitating back towards Purdue Chicken and to those quote-unquote endless nowhere-to-go jobs, okay? So they were bringing in Hispanics and Latinos to take these jobs, okay? They were doing the same thing in the crab industry here in Maryland, you know, to pick crabs and things of that nature, okay? This is where the whole problem started at, okay? Instead of them encouraging these individuals to become citizens, it was cheap labor, and, you know, they didn't have to pay benefits or anything to these individuals. It was a way for these corporations to make money, okay? And in the process, you know, the families got started. They brought the wives over here. They brought the kids over here. And this is why we are where we are today, okay? You know, because of a lack of foresight from the politicians. You know, you can't dump it on the Republican Party. You can't dump it on the Democrat Party. It was all of them. Because most of them, these guys are part of corporate America. And it caused this whole thing to come as it is. Now, do I buy in the fact that they're trying to clear up, make this country whiter? Yeah, maybe so, maybe not. I don't know and everything. But I think a lot of them are running scared because of the simple fact they are coming out. The kids are coming out and being productive in society, okay? You know, and some of them before, they are much older than some of these kids. You know, they're congressmen, they're mayors of these cities in this country, they're judges, they're doing well for themselves, okay? You know, I think a lot is going into the pot that mixes this thing up, okay? You know, but we got to get out and vote, okay? Now, I'm not going to buy into this theory. They're going to round us all up and put us on a boat and send us back to Africa or send us back to Mexico or whatever. We've got to become more politically engaged in our communities, okay, and push back. We got to resist, okay? I don't care if we got to burn cities down to get this message out. We've got to resist the movement that's going on because of these Trump maniacs, okay?
Yeah.
And this is what we got to do. We can't just sit back and say, oh, they're going to put us on a boat and take us back and send us back. No.
And let it happen. Right.
Well, we have to build a fight, but we won't fight.
Well, of course, that wouldn't happen. I was just bringing up an analogy to a book that I had read in worst case scenario. But look, this country is founded on, you know, the principles of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, capitalism, and competition. And mm-hmm. you can't fault somebody for coming to this country and making the best of their lot and getting ahead in life. You didn't fail in life because someone else succeeded.
Right.
You know, our ancestors, you know, Booker T. Washington and all of these other folks had less than we do today and succeeded and got their names in the history books. It's on us. And
right.
you know, this is just another way for the country to implement the divide and conquer, wag the dog scenario where they convince us that, you know, we're each other's enemies and we're distracted from the people who truly are. You know, I can't fault somebody that succeeded in school, that you know, rose up in the ranks in life, whether it's in politics or in wealth. They did it. Good on them. You know, and if I didn't or my peers didn't, then that falls solely on them. And the notion that, you know, the media, you know, quote unquote, you know, Fox News and Breitbart and all of these other places are desperately trying to convince everybody that, you know, illegal immigrants or DACA students are taking from you. And because of that, you don't have what you need in this life is absolute and utter bullshit.
Well, you know what? And I want to say this because I just posted on my personal Facebook page a question. And I asked the question, is the DACA program a threat to employment availability for those who have been born here? And I had one comment that has come in so far, and he says, yes. He said, with that said, if you're, you know, if you own your own business, that's pretty much what he's saying. But then that falls in line with what you were just saying, because just because one person succeeds and the other one doesn't, you know, completely succeed in the manner that they wish, does not necessarily mean that they have taken something away from you. I think that people are losing sight that the DACA program was enacted so that people have an opportunity to be a contributor to the science and the education and the workforce and all of these different things that make this country great. And instead of looking at it as a competition, and that's what it is, I mean, I hear you when you said it was built on, you know, all of these things plus competition. However, the competition doesn't mean that you throw the, you know, the person under the bus, you throw the next group under the bus. If they are bringing something viable to this country and that they are contributing to science and health and research and whatever it is that we need. Exactly. If they are contributors of these factors, then why are we so threatened with having someone here and threatening to send them away? Why are we so threatened when we
because
should be getting off our asses?
Yeah.
But you can't be threatened by that.
They're trying to turn this into our version that, you know, this is almost akin to folks who have an issue with affirmative action. You know, all that program means is that somebody with equal or more qualifications of color gets considered as well. Not that somebody of lesser qualifications gets a job. And it reminds me of that argument when I think about how even people in the African American community are becoming not many, not most, but, you know, a few have been speaking out against DACA, like white people speak out against affirmative action. It's not like somebody's looking at a job application and goes, oh, this one's from DACA. I select them over this person. You know, that has nothing to do with their decision making when they hire somebody. It has to do with their qualifications. It has to do with, you know, the salary they're willing to take. You know, again, people need to get off their ass and make their own success.
But look,
go ahead, Reggie. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Let me play devil's advocate, okay? Let me tell you. I see a lot of, and I could go either way on it, okay, in a hot seat, okay? And I'm going to be honest with you. I see, first of all, I work in a tough African-American neighborhood, okay, where I see a lot of young men that are not doing anything, they're not finding jobs, but they spend the days on PCP and other drugs, okay? Now, okay. Then I see through the models that we are doing, the construction companies that the company hires to do these remodels in our businesses and stuff that we have, all Hispanic men, okay? The location I'm at now is getting remodeled, okay? Hispanic of the laborers, okay? You have five or six, and only one in the group speaks English, okay? All right? Uh-huh. And for me, that's frustrating, okay? Now, I'm going to be honest with you. It's frustrating, okay? Because I'm arresting young black men for shoplifting, you know, sending them through the system and things of that nature. You know, they're saying they can't get jobs because, you know, in a sense, the jobs aren't there. But, you know, Hispanic Latino brothers, you know, the one thing we can say, they show up for work, they do a good job. But uh-huh. they have come in the country and taken a lot of jobs away and out of the hands of African Americans. And we've had protests here in the D.C. area. Wait, let me finish. And we've had protests here in the D.C. area concerning this whole subject here, okay? You know, this issue, okay?
So but you can't blame the immigrants for that. You blame the companies for that. And they hire the immigrants because they're not aware of their rights. Or they may be aware that they have no rights because they're here illegally. These companies hire them because they're the next best thing to slave labor. Because as you said,
they can underpay them.
They can underpay them. They don't have to give them benefits. They can abuse them, make them work 14 hours a day in 110 degree weather, picking strawberries. You know, they blame the companies. Don't.
So what African American is to take that?
To a certain extent, I still blame them to a certain extent, okay? Because one of the things that happened, okay, during the time when this mass immigration took place, okay, in this country, it was very well known, okay? And the buzz in the world was going around down in the South America and places like that we didn't want certain jobs, okay?
Right.
And that's where this whole thing of plentiful jobs came, okay? At one time, we were doing the strawberry, we were doing the tobacco, we were doing the chicken, we were doing the crab pickers and things of that nature. But to a certain extent, we did start gravitating from that work because it didn't pay a whole lot and it was killing people, okay?
Uh-huh.
In a sense, okay? You know,
uh-huh.
So, you know, it's a two-way street on this, okay? It's a two-way street on this, okay? Because when you look at, I try to have as many people get jobs we're coming out with out of African American communities as I can because I know they want to work, they're desperate for work and stuff like that. You know, I do see it, okay? I see it firsthand. You know, I just see it every day and I get frustrated with the whole thing, okay? You know.
But you know what? It's not, but Reggie, it's not just the strawberry fields or the apple orchards. It's not that. I mean, I sit and I interview people all day long. That's what I do,
mm-hmm.
all day long. Trying to give them an in to create a career or create a path for a career. And when I tell them what the starting pay is, and you haven't done shit since you've been out of school, and let's not even say college, because you hadn't even gone to college, and you're going to tell me that's not enough money, and I'm trying to help you to get into the workforce? Come on. And then when I see someone of a different, you know, cultural background come in, they are more than willing to take that job, as long as they can give me documentation that they are supposed to be here. So
that's what we messed up. And I agree. That's what we've messed up at. We have to take ownership of that, okay? We have to take ownership of it.
I think, look, if you were to start, instead of all of this nonsense talk about building a wall and kicking people out of the country, people who are contributing to the economy one way or another. Look, your wages might not be taxed because you're paid under the table, but everything you buy is taxed. Every bill you pay is taxed. So you don't tell me these people are freeloading. But the fact of the matter is, if this country, if this government was genuinely interested in solving this problem, they would go after the companies that are hiring illegal aliens because they can pay them at lower wages and avoid paying benefits. If you went after those companies and forbid them legally under heavy, heavy exorbitant sanctions and made it more expensive for them to do that than not, they would be forced to hire Americans. It's not the illegal aliens that are taking your jobs. It's the greedy-ass companies that are hiring them that are doing it. It's the companies that don't want to offer a livable wage or benefits. It's the companies that want to keep people working 15 hours a day without overtime pay. Those are the culprits. Yeah. Meanwhile, those are the ones that can afford the lobbyists and pay them under the table. Those are the ones that are busting people in, as you said earlier. So, you know, I guess one could almost lay, if you want to call this an immigration problem, you could almost lay this completely at their feet. Because if the jobs weren't here for them and they had to adhere to those labor standards, we wouldn't have this influx of people coming.
So is it truly an immigration problem at that point? When we speak in those terms, then you can't say it's an immigration problem. It's a labor issue. It's a labor issue, because the labor board allows it. They know it's going on. Instead of going into these companies and fining them and doing away with their processes, investigating what's going on, they let it. They know what's going on.
And we're already seeing the ramifications in states like Missouri and other states where fields are going fallow and unharvested because of the crackdown from ISIS. And guess what? Americans are not flocking to those jobs. And you've already seen instances where Americans tried to do the jobs and, quite frankly, just couldn't handle it. I mean, who wants to work in what amounts to basically like being a slave picking cotton? Making cents on the dollar a day. It's despicable. And they're allowing it to happen.
Well, a lot of immigrants are going back to South America and Central America, you know, because of some of the fact this is going on. Because, you know, we see it because we're having shortages in certain foods that are having a hard time getting into the supermarket because these processing companies are losing a lot of people and they're having a hard time replacing these people with health and everything. Texas was one of the main states that, you know, a lot of different vegetables come out of. The Republicans in Texas are definitely against what Trump is trying to do when it comes to immigration laws, because they depend on the help from south of the border to come in and help them harvest their crops, okay? Mm-hmm. And what they ran into this spring and summer was they didn't have enough help to, you know, take care of the crops and get the crops taken care of, because a lot of these guys were saying, hey, you know, we don't want to deal with this. We're just going to go back to Mexico or to Central America. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them did that, you know. So it is the threat coming from Trump is causing a vacuum in certain industries, like in the agricultural area, you know, because these guys don't have the help, man. So these guys are like lobbying and saying, look, we've got to stop this because we need these people here to help us out.
You know, we digress a little bit because we're talking about DACA, you know, and, you know, some of these people, you know, not all immigrants are working like, you know, in the field, obviously, and I don't mean to necessarily stereotype the entire lot of them. It just happens to be the most easiest reference to make. But a lot of them have other jobs in restaurants and some in offices, mailroom and file clerk or other more substantial positions. But the fact is, you know, these parents are taking these jobs at these lesser wages, working their asses off literally to ensure that their students, their children, work their asses off in school so that their next generation can do well and succeed in this country,
do better.
which they're doing.
Exactly.
And the proof is in the numbers, you know, that the students and the people that are registered with DACA are, I would consider, successful Americans. And again, becoming an American is a matter of paperwork. You know, I used this analogy many, many, many shows ago. I said, you know, you can expatriate to Japan and become a Japanese citizen, assuming that they allow that, but you can't become Japanese. You can expatriate to, you know, other countries and become a citizen, but not become Indian or Bangladesh. But you come to America and you become a citizen. You are American, regardless of your religion, your creed, or your melanin. And so the only thing that makes these people different is that they were brought here illegally as children, and then they succeeded as young adults while in school. So the distinction is almost fallacious. These are human beings who are doing really well at contributing to our society, and you know, we should do what Reagan and Bush did and give them amnesty and let them become citizens, because they have proven their worth and they've proven their contribution. You know, it's American.
Do you really think that that's going to happen, though? Do you really?
Well, I'm going to say it nonetheless. You know, it's American citizens that are taking advantage of food stamps and SSI. It's American citizens who have become complacent in many, many respects and are milking the system in many respects. Not all of them, granted, not all of them, but, you know, American citizens are the biggest offenders. And yet we are allowing ourselves to be convinced that this other, because there's always got to be another,
is the problem.
Is the one that's responsible for our poor decisions in life. Is the one that's responsible for our not succeeding, and it's utter bullshit. I'm sorry, I said a lot tonight, but this subject has me heated.
Reggie, are you as heated as Cher?
No, I'm not as heated as Cher. Because it's something's on. They're either going to work it out or they're not going to work it out. That's the only thing that's going to happen. You know, something's got to be done, whether it's for a positive or a negative way. Something's got to be done because it's gotten out of control. And like I said, they allowed it to get out of control because the corporations got greedy. You know, and this is a byproduct of greed.
Yeah.
But here's another thing. Tony, let me just interject this before I forget. Here we have all of these brilliant students who are doing well in school. For all intents and purposes, you could make the argument that we've invested in their education. And we're talking about shipping them out. When for years, I remember when I was first became a recruiter in the early 90s, we used to complain that companies were importing intellects to the country. They were importing engineers and scientists and would-be doctors, rather than investing in training Americans and inspiring them to want to take up those fields
in these professions.
There was a period where we could not compete. We would bring people in, you know, hook them up with houses and jobs, bring their families in, and I don't know if that's dissipated or not. But here we've got, you know, homegrown intellect, and we're talking about shipping them back to their country. And if anything, that's a boon to the countries where they came from, because they got educated here. And they got inspired here, and they will go and bring that entrepreneurial spirit back home. And, you know, hopefully if it did happen, unfortunately, if they did get deported, you know, hopefully they would be able to use everything they learned here to build better lives for themselves in the countries that they left. But the fact is, we've invested in them here. We should benefit from that intellect.
And then and this is my own thinking, but then, you know, you ship them off to wherever you call that home, and then what? America still can't compete with the technology or the sciences, and we're the ones that have given them that education. I mean, so it's twofold here. It is definitely twofold. I mean, you can't have one without the other. When you don't have the Americans here who want to further their education and get more involved and learn more about sciences, engineering, and medicine, researching medicine, finding cures and all of these different things. If you don't have it here, then again, we cannot compete.
Yeah, I think they're being very short-sighted. You know, like their deals, I remember that there were scholarship programs that people could take advantage of if they wanted to pursue education, and, you know, becoming a doctor or a teacher or what have you, and they would get their education paid for with the deal that they gave back to the community in some way, you know,
right.
or, you know, had a multi-year contract to work in a community right. in that, in their chosen profession. And perhaps it would make more sense to do something along those lines here rather than merely kick these people out. It's incredibly short-sighted. But
yeah.
it all goes
yeah.
back to the master plan of dumbing down the country. Of course we don't want these smart immigrants here. They might improve things.
Right.
They might
right.
inspire people to be competitive
they might,
and better in school.
Exactly. 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 I don't know. I don't know. Reggie?
I mean, in African-American community, we are working very hard on the STEM programs, and especially in this area, we're really pushing STEM, and I think it's going to take some years for us to catch up, but I think eventually we're going to catch up and be at a point where, you know, our young people will be able to be very competitive and be able to get some of these jobs that are out here. But, you know, if you look at it, the Silicon Valley, most of that, a large majority of that people come from outside the country, from the Asian countries, okay? That's why you had your Facebooks and your Apples and other companies, you know, complaining and fussing about, you know, the immigration laws that they wanted to pass, especially when it came to banning Muslims from this country, because the way the ban was set up, a lot of people that were employed in Silicon Valley were going to, you know, have issues getting in and out of this country. And, you know, so you have Facebook, Apple, and these guys, they were really on board to, you know, push back on this bill because it affects them. Because a lot of their people, they're not providing this. Not a lot of Americans are working for Apple, okay? There are some.
Uh-huh.
A large contingent of Asians working there because they have the ability and the know-how to do it. But like I said, in certain areas of the country, in the African-American community, STEM is being pushed right now. And I know it's being pushed in this area.
I will say that there are some phenomenal organizations that are speaking to just that issue. I think one is a nonprofit called All Star Coding or something like that, that is looking to work with African-American youth to train them on code and building applications and things of that nature so that they're prepared to compete in the new economy that's being created from technology. And the other thing, too, there was a documentary or something not long ago about the working conditions at Apple in China. It's not great, you know. So, again, taking advantage of creating jobs in another country that may not have the same labor standards that we have. You know, you talk about there being a shortage of jobs in this country. Why isn't Apple here? Why, you know, why do we allow so many companies to move jobs out of the country rather than keep them here and invest in the community to create training programs so that Americans can be trained to take those jobs and compete, not just nationally, but globally. But they don't want that because, you know, a skilled and talented workforce, a knowledgeable workforce wouldn't stand for the nonsense that's going on under this administration. And the other thing too, none of this, there are plenty of schools right now that are celebrating 100% graduation in among with people of color. Colleges, high schools, you know, and the media doesn't promote that. So again, it's not as though the entirety of the African American diaspora in America is doing poorly. I'm not going to feed into that Chicago is a ghetto crap that Trump was promoting on during his campaign. There are a number of our communities that are doing extremely well. And, you know, if the media were to promote that, there might be a little more hope and a less of a willingness to drink the Kool-Aid that they're trying to give us.
All right, then. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. So, you guys have come down to the end, pretty much. What final thoughts do you have, Mr.
Reggie?
what final thoughts do you have?
Well, it's, you know, I think the Democrats are trying to get in on the game, but I don't trust, you know, Trump. You know, they're trying to work DACA and make sure that it ends in a positive way. But I think Trump is playing both sides of the fence now. And I think the Democrats have to be careful in putting their, you know, cards on the table when it comes to Trump. Because you don't know which direction he's going to go. You know, I have a real concern with that, you know, that getting in bed with Trump might not be a good idea. And you know, hopefully, you know, I'm hopeful that they will address this issue before the end of March or by the 1st of March.
Yeah.
You know, make sure it's not, that's not far from here. And it'll be here before we know it. It'll be here before we know it.
I would like to invite anybody interested in supporting DACA students and their right to stay in this country to look up nonprofit organizations that are collecting donations to help pay for the $495 fee for their renewal. I think that's the way that we can fight this administration. We can make his ruling moot by doing that. And then I think that we should push the administration to enforce harsher sanctions on companies that purposely hire illegal aliens or illegal immigrants, and push them to invest in the communities that they build in, push them to invest in education so that the American population can be trained to take these jobs. That'll solve the employment problem, and it'll also do wonders for our economy. But kicking out 800,000 people will not help the economy. And an argument could be said that their very existence and contributing to the economy alone contributes to job creation. So it's extremely short-sighted, whichever way you look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Great job, guys. Great job. Great, great job. So let's go ahead and, I'm just still with Reggie. We got to make some changes, and we have to be more active in the voting process, because a lot of this can, I think, we can rectify a lot of this. But until then, this is what we're faced with. That's my thought on the whole thing. When we wrap it up, that's it. That's where it all starts. And that's where it all starts to stop. That's mine. And I'm just going to stick with that. Go ahead.
Yeah, but let me just say this. We won't go out and participate in the process. We'll sit at home and complain, but we won't get out there and work and get involved with the process, you know. And I'm going to tell you what really bothers me, okay? When you look around the country and you see the protests that are going on that deal with, we'll take Charlottesville for one example, okay? And there were more whites at that protest than there were African Americans, okay? And that bothers me, you know. Now, on the other side of it, you know, when you look at St. Louis, the majority of the people are there African American because African American was shot, okay? But we need to be participating in everything, okay? Because the Confederate flag affects us, you know, just as much as anything else, okay? Now, when we were trying to get the Confederate flag out here and here in my county, out of the county fair, I was at the table. I'm at the table for a lot of stuff, okay? I don't feel like being at the table, but somebody got to be at the table, okay? And
somebody's got to be there.
We got to get to the table. We got to be
there. Yeah. I tell you. All right. So, you ready to get out?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go ahead and get out of here. China, you know what? You guys got me talking and all of this at the same time. Then I can't keep my mind on what I'm doing. That's not good. Really not good. All right, so we're going to go ahead and get out of here. You've been listening to Real World News Radio with Reggie Kearney and Shara Ann Tappan.
Please make sure that you follow Real World News right here on Blog Talk Radio under the Hot Topics Talk Radio Network. You can follow them here, or I should say you can follow them also on Facebook under Real World News Radio. Also, make sure that you visit them on the website at hottopicstalkradio.com. You can find Real World News Radio here every other Tuesday night at 5:30 p.m. Pacific, 7:30 p.m. Central, and 8:30 on the East Coast. The call-in number is always going to be the same right here on the under the network. It's 646-200-3148. And we welcome your comments on Facebook. So I want you to come on back here tomorrow. No, not tomorrow night. On Thursday night, Hot Topics Talk Radio is actually taking some time off. And we want to send all of our love and our prayers to our brother in radio, Mr. Roland D., who lost his brother last week. So all of our love and all of our prayers go to the McKeever family. But you can join us on Man-to-Man Radio on Thursday night at 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 9 o'clock Central, and 10 o'clock on the East Coast with, I'm forgetting everything, with Chris Smith and Richard Hall. So as Man-to-Man Radio here on Blog Talk Radio under Hot Topics Talk Radio Network on Thursday night. So until then, we will wish you a very, very good night. And we hope to hear from you on Thursday night. And again, the Hot Topics Talk Radio Network is sponsored by Shades of Africa in two locations and in the city of Corona. Also sponsored by SCMGS. Thank you, Ms. Gina Smith, for always making sure that we continue to be relevant in print media. Thank you also to Urban Sentinel, the Urban Sentinel. That is run by Editor-in-Chief Mr. Reggie Kearney, our very own. You got to check him out. You want to talk about real news? Then that's it right there. Urban Sentinel. And thank you, Ms. Jamie Smith, over at the Ninth Island Cultural Club of Las Vegas. So again, thanks a lot for joining us and listening in. And we will talk to you soon. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.